Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-hour home care.
I was treating all these patients with all kinds of medications and other modalities, not knowing what the ultimate outcome was. Was I really helping people improve their function? Was I helping them improve their work life, their family life? I was seeing a lot of patients with arthritis, for example, and I was wondering, these women, mostly predominantly women with rheumatoid arthritis, were they getting better in terms of being able to care for their family, have a social life, that type of thing? And I didn't know the answer.
Welcome to another edition of Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. In today's episode, co-host Zach Morgan and I sat down with Dr. Naveen Raja, the Medical Director for Accountable Care and Population Health at UCLA Health. Dr. Raja shares a success story about a patient that his team did some great work on and helps define what accountable care and population health is at UCLA, as well as how UCLA has been at the forefront of population health and been practicing in population health for many decades. In today's episode, you'll learn not just about Dr. Raja's professional side, but how he's raising three triplets, or three young boys. We hope you enjoyed today's show, and if you do, feel free to leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also find us on Spotify and pophealthpodcast.com. We hope you enjoyed today's show.
So, can you tell us something that the audience might not know about you, maybe something outside of work?
Outside of work, I would say one of the most important things in my life is that we have four children, and that includes a set of triplets.
Wow.
Triplet boys, and that keeps us hopping, as you can imagine.
Yes.
And keeps life interesting.
And how old are they?
The boys are 13.
13, wow.
So when you were having triplets, when did you know you were going to have triplets?
When we're pregnant. We knew that, but it was still a... big surprise on the day we found out.
Yeah.
Do you have any other like twins or triplets in your families at all?
I'm a twin myself.
Are you? Interesting. Yes. Okay. Fantastic.
So do the triplets still wear similar clothes today or?
No, they don't wear similar clothes. They have very distinct personalities.
Yeah. Nice. Very good.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into healthcare initially, and kind of your career path that has led you to where we are today here at UCLA?
When I was in college, I had an interest in working with people. That was the thing that got me into healthcare. And I was thinking, how can I work with people all day, every day, and have an impact on them? I didn't have any interest in sitting behind a desk and doing some work. So I thought that would be a good calling for me. And that's how I got into healthcare.
Yeah. And initially, when you began to practice medicine, what kind of medicine did you start to practice? Is that what your initial plan was? Or did it kind of evolve over your time in, say, medical school or right out of medical school?
I wanted to work with, so to speak, the whole person.
Sure.
And at that time, I thought that meant going into internal medicine. Yeah. And so I went into internal medicine. Then I got very interested in rehabilitation and helping people improve their function. And that led to my interest in rheumatology, and I did a fellowship in rheumatology, arthritis, and connective tissue diseases like lupus.
Yeah.
So that's what my specialty is.
Yeah. And so now you run a department here, so you have not only clinical responsibilities. Was that something that interested you when you were going through med school or out of med school, or did you just imagine that you would focus mostly on practicing for your career?
I only imagined practice.
Yeah.
But along the way, I used to be in private practice at one point, and I went through a little bit of self-reflection and thought during those years, and I was treating all these patients with all kinds of medications and other modalities, not knowing what the ultimate outcome was. Was I really helping people improve their function? Was I helping them improve their work life, their family life? I was seeing a lot of patients with arthritis, for example, and I was wondering, these women, mostly predominantly women with rheumatoid arthritis, were they getting better in terms of being able to care for their family, have a social life, that type of thing? And I didn't know the answer. And I went through a little bit of a reflection where I thought, am I doing any good? And the way I could get to the answer was through analytics.
Yeah.
So I implemented an electronic health record system in my practice and began to look at data to see, have I helped patients?
Yeah.
That's how I got into thinking about systems or the bigger picture.
Yeah. Sure. And when you implemented the electronic health record, may I ask about what year that was?
That was around, I want to say, about 2004.
2004. So, you know, we always hear that even today in 2018, there's some physicians who don't or aren't on an electronic health record. If you can recall, were you one of the first to implement an electronic health record in a individual practice?
I would say I was one of the first, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it was a very exciting time in building EMRs and finally converting the traditional physician office into a digital practice, where the focus being that once you had that kind of data, you could look at your practice from a bigger perspective and say, well, how many patients with rheumatoid arthritis do I have? And how did I treat them?
Yeah.
And then what were the outcomes?
Yeah.
So you couldn't have that previously. You couldn't read 2,000 charts.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And so that led you to City of Hope. And for those of us in the area here, we know the name City of Hope and we know what it does. But for the audience, can you maybe explain a little bit about City of Hope and then how you ended up there?
Yes. So I had some experience implementing electronic health record systems. Mm. Our hospital, where I was affiliated with at that time, was also implementing electronic health record system. And I was involved with a private company where we developed our own electronic health record platform. And so I was doing a lot of informatics type of work. And with City of Hope, I had an opportunity to go there and implement an electronic health record platform. At that point, City of Hope was completely on paper.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe now, but
yeah.
It was fully on paper, and they were looking for a clinical leader to help take them to implementing the clinical aspects of an EMR at City of Hope. And we were able to successfully transform City of Hope from paper to electronic.
Yeah. And had you had experience with oncology in the past, or was that a relatively new experience for you as well, even though you were doing the information health side?
I had no more exposure to oncology than any other physician at that point.
Yeah.
It's a little known fact, but City of Hope, while it's a cancer hospital, has physicians of all specialties. You know, I was a rheumatologist there, for example. We have dermatologists, yeah. Infectious disease doctors, because all of those types of physicians are needed for cancer care.
Yeah.
So cancer care is not simply something that's delivered by oncologists.
Sure.
It's with multiple specialties.
Sure.
Okay.
And so for the audience, what exactly is informatics? Can you give us kind of the layman terms breakdown of what that means in a setting like your role at City of Hope?
Informatics is really use of data to improve some business process or business outcome, or help achieve a business outcome. In this case, clinical outcomes in healthcare. So what that means is you may have electronic health record systems, you may have databases, you may have all types of data flowing into the organization. That doesn't do anything by itself. You have to use the data to transform care, to improve care, to help improve the outcomes in patients. So that process, taking the data once it's available to actually getting it to an outcome, is informatics.
Yeah. And so did you continue to see patients during your time there, or were you focused mostly on this data analysis and data collection role? And if you did do both, how did you balance the two?
I did both.
Yeah.
It was mostly informatics work.
Yeah.
But I see myself as doing clinical work even when I'm doing informatics. The work with patients doesn't end in the moment you walk out of the exam room. There's all kinds of things that have to happen before and after and during. And so it's a continuum, and informatics is one part of that continuum.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing a little bit about your time at City of Hope. So you're at City of Hope implementing this big project. You were successful there. What inspired you to transition over to UCLA?
When I was at City of Hope, we were just beginning to get data and use the data to help transform care. And it was relatively early in the process of doing that. And I had a lot of interest in using the data for population health. And with UCLA, I had an opportunity to work at an organization where there was a lot of history and experience with population health. UCLA has been doing population health for decades. So it was a wonderful opportunity to join an organization that had been doing population health for some time and contribute to the mission of this organization.
Very good. And a big part of that is your role with the accountable care portion of UCLA. And can you define accountable care here in your role?
Yeah, so When we say accountable care, what we mean is there are patients for whom we are somehow contractually accountable in delivering an outcome. So we group those patients as quote-unquote accountable care patients. But that's only from a contractual perspective.
Okay.
We're really interested in something called population health. And population health means that we look at our patient populations in aggregate and see what the outcomes are in aggregate. An individual doctor seeing a patient will only know what happened to that patient. In general, most doctors don't know how they're doing as a practice. So if you take a doctor who's a primary care doctor, and in most doctors, if you ask them, how are you doing in treating diabetes in your population? How are your patients doing? What is the average hemoglobin A1C in your population? They may not know that information. So what we're trying to do with population health is have that information by practice, by pod, by department, by whole health system level. See how are we doing in treating diabetes or any number of conditions.
Just on a very high level without diving too far into it, what does that allow a doctor to do when they have that information that they didn't previously have?
Well, I believe in the axiom, you can't change what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So what we're doing is surfacing data and bringing it to the doctor's awareness. When doctors know that, I mean, they know what to do. They just don't know the current state. So if we surface the current state, they will know what to do to get the outcomes where they need to be.
So are you able to share with the audience who are some of UCLA's accountable care partners?
Yes, we work with a number of commercial health plans.
Okay.
We also have our own self-insured employee population. We have a medical group that has an HMO line of business.
Okay.
And we also have governmental programs. We participate in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, and we also participate in the state of California's Prime program.
Okay.
So these are all programs that in some manner aggregate patient populations for quality and cost outcomes.
Okay. So you've worked at City of Hope, you worked in private practice, and now you're here at UCLA. City of Hope, UCLA, big organizations, well-respected. Since your time at UCLA, what would you say stands out or what's different about UCLA versus other organizations?
I think UCLA has an extraordinary focus on patient-centeredness. UCLA focuses on all three of its missions, clinical care, education, and research. So that's a big undertaking. And
yeah.
UCLA is very committed to those three missions, and it's exciting to work at an organization that is trying to advance all three of them.
Very neat. So I know you mentioned earlier off mic, you're at the medical center quite a bit, most of your meetings. And just so you folks know, we're recording not at UCLA Medical Center, but a little bit off site. It's a very hot day today. It's going to reach 100. Yet Dr. Roger will still be walking. I asked him if he's going to Uber, Lyft, or other means of transportation. I think, Zach, you were saying, what was the other means?
The scooters. We're noticing the bird scooters around all over Westwood.
Yeah. And I guess I'm a wimp because I'd probably Uber or Lyft because I just broke a sweat just walking here from the parking structure. But you mentioned you spend about, is it 75% or how much time are you at a medical center? And then where do you spend your other time?
It's probably something like that. 75% of my meetings are probably over there and 25% of my meetings are here.
Okay. Very good. Folks, take a break and we'll be right back. Dr. Raja, can you share with us some of the work that you're doing here at UCLA?
Sure, Gavin. So at UCLA, for our population health efforts, we've been thinking about how to make our population health efforts patient-centered. What do our patients need? How can we provide the best service for them? So towards that end, we have a number of initiatives, and I'm going to describe a few of them. First of all, we want to look at where our patients live. We look at what kind of health needs they have, and whether we are providing adequate access. We may have the best facilities, but how do our patients find accessing it? Can they access it easily? So those are the things that we've been working on from a patient perspective. And we use some advanced analytics to help us understand where our patients are. We use the data in our electronic health record system. We use data from our claims database. So all of this helps us really understand our population and the needs they have. Then we use the data to make interventions. First of all, we tell our doctors that we want to make the diagnoses of our patients as specific as possible. The better we understand what our patients have, the better we understand our patients and the
better we can tailor our services to support our patients. So we're working on a number of diagnostic coding initiatives. We also then work on something that we call care gaps. Care gaps are things that our patients need they haven't had. So things could, like mammography or colon cancer screening, those kinds of things. And we work with our doctors, but we also work with our patients. We let our patients know what it is that they need from a preventive health perspective and what they can do to improve their own care. So we use a number of technologies to help with that. For example, we have an initiative where we have an automated calling system that can call patients and remind them of what they need to do. And patients can push a button to speak with somebody if they want to. So then we have initiatives that work on patients who have been hospitalized. Patients who have been hospitalized, as you know, have sometimes a rough transition back to their home. And so we're thinking about ways to help ease that transition and be there as a support throughout the whole process. First of all, our nurses and doctors in the hospital do everything they can to make the transition as smooth as possible. Then for our Medicare Advantage patients, we have an initiative where we send a home worker, a non-licensed but home worker who goes into the patient's home to assess the patient and say, how is the transition back to the home for you? Do you understand your diagnosis? Do you understand how you need to take care of yourself now? Do you understand your medications? Because there may be a change in medications after you got home. And then do you know what your follow-up is when you need to see your doctor and your appointments made? Do you know how to get to your doctor? Do you have the means? So those are things that our care coordinators and a community-based organization that we have partnered with help us achieve. The overall theme here is, how can we be more patient-centered? How can we take the needs of our patients into account as we step into the next phase of healthcare, which is to enable our own patients to take care of themselves?
Dr. Raja, can you tell us a little bit about this non-clinical workforce? And you mentioned a community-based organization that you partner with. Can you share about that partnership and the workforce that's being deployed to the homes?
Yes, sure. So we use a community-based organization called Partners in Care in conjunction with our own care coordination team to support patients in their home after they are discharged from the hospital. And the actual staff member who goes to the home is called a community health worker. And they are in the front lines in the patient's home. However, in the behind the scenes, they have support from our care coordination team, a social worker, a nurse, and a care coordinator. So they're also in touch with our pharmacists. So this community health worker, when they go to the patient's home, when they take stock of the patient's medications, for example, they take those medications and fax it to our pharmacist. And the pharmacist looks up the patient's record and sends back to them a list of medications that the patient is supposed to be on. And then the community health worker then works with the patient to make sure that they understand the medications and that they take it in the correct manner.
That's great. I'm familiar with the Partners in Care Foundation and their community health workers. I had the opportunity to work alongside them on some different projects myself. Can you tell us a little bit about the behavioral health integration work that you're doing here at UCLA?
In our primary care model here, we think that behavioral health is a very big component of the reason why patients come to our primary care offices. And historically, there's been a great difficulty for patients to get adequate access to behavioral health. So one of the things that UCLA has done is to place behavioral health within the primary care offices in many cases. And in those cases where we don't have behavioral health in the primary care offices, we have formed something called a behavioral health network, a network of specialists in the area who can then see the patient and with whom the primary care doctor works closely. So it's a very collaborative model. In case when the behavioral health specialist is in the primary care offices, they're actually embedded and integrated with our practice.
So there's a term that you used called risk adjustment. Can you help the audience understand what the term risk adjustment means?
Sure. So when we look at populations, we look at how our performance is with our population. How well are we taking care of our population? The measures are quality, patient experience, and then also utilization. How much of our services are being used by a specified patient population. And there is a concept of appropriate utilization and inappropriate utilization. So for example, if a patient is going to the emergency room at night because they have ingrown toenail, it's really inappropriate. So one of the things we do is identify all of these things, look at the performance of our population. Now, how do we know that the performance of our population is proportionate to the level of severity of the conditions in our population? So maybe in our patient population, there's a higher density of chronic conditions compared to someone else's population, which would, of course, impact the total cost and utilization. So as a way of assessing the severity of our population or the acuity of our population, we do something called HCC coding. It's a certain diagnosis codes, which are normally coded in ICD-10 codes. Some of them are designated as HCC codes. This stands for hierarchical condition categories. And when a doctor uses that, that code is then used to assess the severity of a patient's condition. Add up all of those diagnoses in our patient population to give us a score of the acuity of our patient population. And we call that risk adjustment.
Thanks, Dr. Raja. We're now going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Dr. Raja, can you tell us a success story you've seen with care coordination here at UCLA?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Our care coordination team works very hard in taking care of our patients. Roughly, they fill the gap between what happens in the clinic and in the hospital and works on patients who are at home, largely, and address their needs. So I'm going to give you an example of a patient who went home from the hospital. She had a bed. She needed a specific bed for her medical condition, and that she had a bed for many years. It was a very special bed, and that enabled her to be comfortable at home and to avoid some of the problems that you would have with a normal bed. And when she got back from the hospital, she found that her bed wasn't working. It turns out that bed was not easily available in the market. It also turned out that her insurance company didn't know anything about that bed, and it was difficult for them to authorize something they didn't really understand. So our care coordinators stepped in, actually visited the patient's home, really got a really good understanding of that bed, and then scoured the manufacturers and found that bed. And then passed that information along to the health plan, got that approved, and got her a new bed. While this may seem trivial to many of us, this was a very big thing in the patient's life because it really impacted her quality of life. And getting her this bed back made a tremendous difference to her life.
So Dr. Raja, your role here at UCLA, some might consider complex. And we were talking off mic, you have children at home. When you go home, what do you tell your kids you do?
It's really hard. As it turns out, they ask me that. My kids have a personality where they ask me this question daily. They ask me, what did you do today? I'm forced to think about my day and also recount that day for myself and them. In the process, I get to see whether I have had an impact. So it's really fun and also deeply self-reflective. And so what I tell them is that I help doctors and nurses and pharmacists and others take care of patients, and I help patients get better care. That's what I tell them. Now they get what population health is. They might be able to answer your question.
After speaking about Dr. Raja's boys, we turned our attention to technology, a topic we often talk about here on Pop Health Podcast.
Let's talk a little bit about challenges that you've seen with technology. Maybe here at UCLA, it could be at City of Hope, just in general, what have you seen as some challenges?
I think the biggest challenge we have in healthcare with regard to technology is we're not connected. So we know what happens at UCLA.
Okay.
Other organizations know what happens within their organization, but the connectivity between the two is lacking. So today, while connectivity is still lacking, what we do is, as part of our accountable care organization work, we aggregate data on patients from our own electronic health record system,
okay. As
well as claims data. Claims data is simply payment data from other institutions.
Yeah.
And so we aggregate all of that to get a picture of what's happening with the patient. And it's a more complete picture than what's in our own records. So using that information, we try to stratify the risk of a patient having future problems.
Yeah.
So we are using technology and in quite an effective manner, something that we couldn't do in the past. However, we have a long way to go as a country in getting information connected.
So here comes the tough part. How do we solve that problem?
From my perspective, I think what's needed is some standard setting. Might have to be some consensus between organizations or regulatory, but we need some standard setting and expectation setting. And then the then the connection will follow.
Yeah. And because you have these accountable care, you have your ACO, you're responsible for these patients, does some of the connectivity that you're talking about, like you might not know if a patient goes to, say, different emergency department here in Los Angeles or in another city. Is that some of the challenges that you're talking about with the systems not talking to each other?
That is exactly the type of challenges we're talking about. So if a patient who is in our ACO goes to another hospital or they go to the emergency room somewhere else, we don't know about it in real time. We might get claim, even in those patients, we get information only months later through the claims process. And so that's a significant disconnect.
So we talked about technology professionally. Let's talk about personally. I'm assuming you have a smartphone. I think you muted your phone earlier. What app on your phone could you not go without?
One thing I couldn't go without, my GPS navigation systems. Yes. I enjoy that every day.
Especially coming to Westwood.
Yes.
Where are you coming from, if you mind me asking? What general area?
I come from the eastern part of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a San Gabriel Valley guy, so I know the feeling.
Yes. Yes. I contend with traffic every day, and GPS helps me navigate that. I can't help think that's what we're lacking in our patient care apps.
Yeah.
You know, patients don't have a GPS for healthcare. I think they could really use one.
Yeah.
You know, where to go in, when it's urgent, where to go when it's an emergency.
Yeah.
Where is the most cost-effective place to get care? Where is the place where I can get care at this hour? Those are things that are not easy for our patients to navigate. And an app or some such solution would be very helpful.
Now, I know at UCLA, the comprehensive care team.
Comprehensive care coordination team.
Yes. So they help a little bit with patients and kind of helping them. Is it just navigating, like setting up their care, or do they help? Does UCLA have something to help patients navigate the system?
Yes, UCLA has lots of processes to help patients. Our care coordinators call patients, assess their needs, and intervene. It could be transportation, access to care, housing, food insecurities, any of these social determinants types of things, or in addition to their medical issues, are addressed by our care coordinators.
Okay.
So we have that. What I'm referring to is real-time guidance. So at 2 a.m., a patient has an issue. What is the guidance? Where does it come from?
So I know some health plans, what do they have at the nurse triage line? If someone's under the accountable care side, would they have to call their plans triage today, or how would that work?
No, they can call us as well. UCLA has triage lines.
Okay.
Many of the health plans have them too. But it still relies on a patient to think about that and call us.
Be proactive, right. Yeah.
There's not anything in their phone, since you asked about the phone, there's nothing in their phone that guides them what to do.
Okay. That makes sense. This is a fun question I love to ask. I don't intend for it to be a loaded question. But let's talk about incentives for patients to basically self-care. What are your thoughts on having incentives, whether it's maybe a reduction in, you know, their monthly insurance payment? How do you feel about patient incentives to reduce their own cost of care?
I think it's generally a good idea. You know, we can't achieve the outcomes we want unless patients are a partner. In fact, we're doing it for them. It's their healthcare, and we are just an organization that supports their care.
Yeah.
And so the more engaged they are, the better it is. And in our programs, we focus a lot on patient engagement. It's called patient activation.
Okay.
So we're very interested in that. And if there are incentives that helps achieve that goal, then I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Nice. I know my wife, she's a school teacher. Tina is probably not listening, but that's her name. She's listened to one. I think that was enough for her. But her district gives up to $500 of incentives, $100 for getting a flu shot, $100 for getting a biometric screening. And to me, it seems to make sense. So I'm glad to hear your opinions on it as well, but I do think that's something that can benefit the future.
As we kind of wrap up here, what advice or what piece of advice would you give the audience, or do you give other healthcare professionals when you are brainstorming or coming up with ideas?
This reminds me of a conversation I had with one of my patients. Whenever he comes in, he always has some advice about the health system and what we could be doing better. And one of those occasions, he told me, "Hey, doc, you know, you make a lot of decisions here, your organization does, and sometimes those decisions are hard for us to understand. But can I ask you one thing? When you make those decisions, could you have me in mind?" Can you think about me when you make those decisions? What I might want, what I might need, what I might value. So when people ask me this question, that's the answer I have, because I think that's the best answer I've heard. And that's something we have in mind when we make decisions here at UCLA.
And does that lead to the outcomes? Most of the time, does that end up leading to the outcomes that you're looking for? Because I could imagine that there would be kind of systemic pressures to do certain things to achieve certain goals. But just focusing on what's right for the patient and what the patient needs generally tend to lead to success in those other areas?
I think so. I think patients have a good sense of what is valuable to them, and that whatever is valuable to them is generally what helps improve their health outcomes. And when we align ourselves with that, we have good outcomes and we have become good partners to our patients.
And one last question. So you may have heard, you probably heard, earlier this year in 2018, CMS mentioned that Medicare Advantage plans beginning in 2019 will be able to offer new supplemental benefits that were never offered before. Earlier you talked about transportation. My background is working for a home care company. What benefits do you think health plans should really consider adding to their plans that don't exist today? Or what do you think would help patients that don't exist today?
One area I think would be very important is access. And one part of that is transportation. I think transportation is a really good thing for the health plans to focus on. If we can't get patients to see their doctors, it's very hard to accomplish anything else.
Yeah.
So many of our patients have challenges in that area. And I think that's a great place to start. Another good place is nutrition. People have difficulty in cooking and caring for themselves, you know, obtaining nutritious food. That would be another area where it would be very helpful.
Yeah, I know. We were talking off mic earlier about a former UCLA leader, Dr. David Feinberg, on the East Coast, works with Geisinger Health System, and they actually do, they're similar to a Kaiser model where they're insurer and all of that. So they have the flexibility to do that now. And it seems to be working. So it's nice to see here on the West Coast that can happen potentially.
Yes, we're actually excited about this change, and we look forward to working with our payer partners in rolling out some benefits for our patients.
Very good. Well, folks, Dr. Naveen Raja has been our guest. He has a wealth of experience, as we've learned earlier, here with UCLA and previously with City of Hope. He has a passion for patient-centered care and doing what's right for the patient. So, Dr. Raja, it's been a privilege. I've had the opportunity to work with your team throughout the years. And it's great to sit down with you in person as well. Zach, thanks for joining. And folks, if you like today's show, feel free to check out other episodes at pophealthpodcast.com or on iTunes or on Stitcher. And as of now, you can find this episode on Spotify as well. So really excited to be on Spotify too. Thanks, folks, to reach out to Zach. Zach, how do folks get a hold of you?
Just go to the website and you'll find our contact information there.
Very good. Thanks, Zach. Good shout out to the website. All right, folks. Thanks so much. Take care.